Okay, let me start by going back to the 1/2 BS. Yeah.
Yeah. Question.
Yeah.
So very simple question. Suppose you have two BPS states.
Yeah.
Which are described by two droplets.
Right.
And you want to take, and these droplets in principle intersect each other like this.
Okay.
Well, they
touch.
They have some non-zero common area.
Well, they can't have. I mean, you can have something like that, right? But the density should be 1. Otherwise, the density would be 2 in the region where they intersect.
Yeah, but can you consider them separately? One droplet somewhere and then another droplet?
Oh, you can certainly consider two separate droplets, yeah. Yes?
But you can't intersect themselves.
Well, no, they touch. When they touch, you'll have a singularity. When they touch here. The geometry will become similar in this region.
What happens if you have a time-dependent process roughly where they try to move towards each other? What's the consummation of that?
I'm not sure exactly what the dynamics is for them to start moving around. One would have to work out exactly, but in principle,
no sense in which 1, 2, 1 could make sense. The density 1, 2, 1.
No, I think density 2 cannot. Well, let me discuss that in a sec. So let me discuss that separately. So here I think what will happen is that, well, when they are very close, you cannot really talk about the sharp boundaries anymore. You have to consider the fermions. And then when you describe it in terms of fermions, this process I expect to be smooth. In terms of the fermions, you won't have a singularity, right? Now let me discuss this question of whether the density can be different from 0 or 1. So, what happens?
The singularity is an artifact of the bosonic description, is that what you're saying?
Well, the gravity solution becomes singular, mm-hmm. but the fermion description is non-singular.
Okay.
This is similar to what happens. So that already happens when you take one fermion close to the surface, right? So we discussed that the density of fermions can be either 0 or 1, right? And otherwise, the solution would be singular. What happens if you take the fermion density to be, let's say, between 0 and 1? This is certainly something you would expect that this should be reasonable from the fermion point of view. So you could just consider, in terms of the fermions, you dilute the fermions a little bit, and this certainly makes sense. Certainly makes sense in the fermion theory. What you get in this case are solutions that are singular, and they have a singularity that is essentially null. It's sort of like a little bit like a horizon, but it is singular. But there is no pathology outside the singularity. So you would expect that when you get close to singularity, you should go to the more fine-grained description in terms of fermions, but that the solution away from the singularity should be essentially the same. Okay? So that's in this situation. And in fact, there is a singular solution people have considered, which is you take a black hole in ADS5 that carries charge J, right, the same charge that we discussed, and you can in principle have non-extrema black holes of this type and then take the extrema limit. And if you do that, you get a singular solution, and it's a solution that preserves all the supersymmetries and so on that we discussed. And when you take that solution and you reinterpret it in terms of this, you find the function C that I discussed, and you ask, well, what's the fermion density? The fermion density ends up being something like 1 plus Q, where Q is essentially the charge of the solution. So you get something reasonable with fermion density less than 1. Now, what happens if the fermion density is outside this range? So, for example, if the fermion density is less than 0 or rho is bigger than 1, then... So people analyzed this situation, and what they found is that in these cases you have pathologies even outside the singularity. So there's some singularity, but there are also pathologies outside. There are closed time-like curves outside. So as you start, in other words, if you had this, you have this direction y and x. When you even far away, even sort of far from the y equal to 0 region, you start having closed time-like curves. So. These closed time-like curves.
Just even if rho is integer.
Yeah.
In other words, the most naive thing I would have thought is that rho counts the number of spheres. mm-hmm. on top of each one of a given type which is not shrinking. So if it's zero, it means that that type of sphere is shrunk. There's none of that. And if it's one, it means that sphere is there. If it's two, it means there are two or three spheres and so on, disconnected from mm-hmm. that big universe. In which case, you could have a more interesting geometry where they can get reconnected. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing could be connected, but the counting of the spheres would have been disconnected. But you're saying that that is not.
Yeah, I think there wasn't anything special when rho is integer. I'll double check.
And I guess that doesn't have a fermion description.
Right.
That violates the.
Yeah, these are things.
So there will be different species of fermions if that's the case. It would be different mm-hmm. different types of fermions mm-hmm. if that would make sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. But here in this description there is there might be some other version of this. Right? At least in the context of, for example, any but for young males, you don't expect to have a different species of fermions. You just have one species of fermions. And so you certainly don't expect to have this type of solutions. No, so there are various other examples where when you try to violate some unitarity bound or some bound that you have in the dual field theory that comes under the general principles, you typically get closed time like curves. So I view that as an indication that these space times with closed time like curves are really sick.
From this point of view, seriously, the conclusion is they have no microscopic description.
Right. Well, they cannot arise. You cannot start with any. I know any quantiforian mass and produce them, or ADS 5 versus 5 and produce them. This would be the natural conclusion. It might be that the spacetimes with closed time like curves exist in isolation, but they are not in a situation where you have a region with closed time like curves, which is then asymptotic to ADS 5 versus 5. And everything I said is for these VPS states. There might be closed time like curves in non-VPS situations in principle. Though I don't think so. Well,
going back to the question, what happens if you take linear combination of two VPS states? Basically, in an over space, you take VPS state 1 and VPS state 2, but the parameter of the four, then.
So the discussion of Fermi droplets is good for certain states where you know you have the fermion. So if you take microscopic superpositions, then this description would not be good. The description in terms of droplets would not be appropriate for those states. Okay, so. So let me go back to these theories that we get by doing this answer. So we started from the M-theory solutions that obey this equation. We simplified the equations using this change of variables. This change of variables was, we didn't invent this. This was, this is something standard for this equation and so on. And then you get this
the literature.
Yeah, the way. Okay. I'll explain to you where it comes from. Maybe I should say one. The equations that we have found, both in the type 2b case and in this case, are related to equations you would find if you were looking for hyperkeller spaces. So if you take. If you just write down. I knew we were going to be interested in this. If you just write down the conditions for four dimensional hyperkeller geometry that has a U1 symmetry. Then you get either you get linear either the Laplace equation or you get this equation. It's not exactly the same as the one we had, but similar. And this is not a coincidence. And it's not a coincidence because you can take some limits of the geometries we discussed, for example, the large S5 limit and so on, in which essentially you get the hyperkeller geometry times something else. So in other words. These hyperkeller spaces is a limit of the. They preserve a supersymmetry algebra, which is a limit of the algebra we discussed. So our supersymmetry algebra has some terms in the right hand side, right? Some currents, etc., some these SO4 currents. If you take the limit in which these ones are not here, or these become translation symmetries, that's more precisely the limit, then it becomes a Poincaré algebra, and with four sort of compact directions. well, not necessarily compact, but four directions on which things vary. One is the isometry, and the other one are the three directions we discussed. And this isometry, people have characterized it in two ways. There is something called rotational and something called translational. And the difference is that in one case, the Killing spinner depends on this isometry, and in the other one, it doesn't. And in one case, you have the linear equation. Those are the Gibbons-Hawking solutions. And then in the other case, you have the 3D total equation that we discussed. If you had two Killing vectors, then the two solutions would be the two answers should be valid at the same time. So there should be a way to linearize this equation. So people went out and found how to do it, and they found this is the way to linearize the equation. Okay.
I should talk to you. I have a context which I have not seen the application for, where what I guess is the Laplace equation S3.
Okay.
I'd really like to know when it's useful.
Okay.
It involves something like a conformal given spinner.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah, so the equations, so especially in this Toda case, the equations are exactly the same as you get for hypercolor geometries, but the way you find a 10-dimensional solution from this function D is different. So that's so it looks as if you took these hypercolor solutions and then you did something to them and to produce.
To be more precise, this Toda equation also characterizes quaternion Kaelin geometries, the extension of hyperkaelin. They also appear in N equals 2 supergravity theories.
Okay, I see.
I think the four-dimensional part of your 11-dimensional supergravity solution is a quaternion Kaelin manifold with a single isometry.
Okay, that might be. Yeah. What we did check is that it's not a hyperkaelin manifold.
Exactly, it's a
quaternion. Okay. Okay, so let's see. Well, now let me discuss some further things about this type of solutions. In general, we have a linear equation and this electrostatic problem. But this is not a trivial electrostatic problem. It's not easy to solve. So when you have conducting disks and so on, it's you basically can't solve them. At least we didn't find simple solutions. You can solve them. You can solve them in some special situations. So these are some situations. I'm just going to mention which cases we've solved. So you can consider the case of a single disk, and then through some manipulations, you can actually solve the electrostatic problem. Also using work of Pope and others that characterize some of these gravity solutions also. And in that case, so the case of a single disk corresponds to the case of a D2 brain or 2 plus 1 Young Mills, super Young Mills on S2. Okay. That preserves 16 supercharges. So this is similar to, so you are probably familiar with the D2 brain theorem on R2 or on S2 plus R. You're probably familiar with the theory on R2 plus 2,1, so the theorem living on flat D2 brains in 10 dimensions. But this is the formation or variation of that theory where you put the theory in S2 cross R. Similar to what you do with any equal to 4 Young Mills, that you can put it in S3 cross R or on R4. And both preserve 16 supersymmetries. Though in this case, so when you consider the theory here has an SO7 symmetry. This theory here has only an SO6 symmetry. Okay. Now, this theory here can be viewed as a reduction of n equal to 4 super Young Mills on S3 cross R, where you consider all states that are invariant under AU1. So before, we viewed the plane wave matrix model as a reduction of Young Mills, where we consider all states that were invariant under SU2. Now you just consider states that are invariant under some U1, let's say left, that was embedded in the SU2 left that we discussed, that eventually is embedded in the symmetry group of ADS. So so if you consider just this reduction, you take out one of the dimensions, so you get the theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions. So again, it's a theory that shares some properties with n equal to 4 Young Mills. Certainly, both of them have the SO6 symmetry, so now you understand why it has the SO6 symmetry. Again, it's a theory that has a mass gap. It does have one peculiar feature, which is that, it actually has some space of solutions, which is infinite but sort of discrete. So you can take these brains. So there's one special scalar, let's call it phi. So out of the 7 scalars of this theory, there are 6 that we treat in the same way and 1 which we treat in a special way. And this scalar has an action which contains a term like this, let me write it like this. So it has a term in the action which involves the magnetic flux on the 2 sphere. Okay. So then what you find is that configurations, and also there is a mass term, squared. So configurations which in which the magnetic field on the sphere and phi are related, can, so this combines with the so these terms here combine into a square, the perfect square, so you can give waves of this phi, but these waves are quantized. So this is one feature that this theory has. And these correspond to different disks that you can put here in the vertical direction.
Is that in any way related to the S2 reduction in Markov number? When you say there's a circle action,
it's exactly that. Yeah. Yeah. This U1 is the U1 that acts on the hop fiber of the S3. Okay. Now, one thing you can do is you can. In N equal to 4, it's especially simple to study states that have large quantum numbers under S of 6. So, for example, you can take states that have angular momentum J under S of 6, and then take this plane wave limit and study small fluctuations around those states and so on. So, and those were especially simple to study and to make some correspondence with the field theory and so on. You can ask the same question for this theory, and you can ask, well, how does it differ, and how what are the similarities and differences in these two cases? The first thing we'll do is we'll ask, if you have some state with large A, where does it live in this geometry? So if you have a massless geodesic, so let's represent this state as a massless geodesic that is moving on DS5. Where does it live? At what point does it live? Well, it turns out that it lives here at the tip of these disks. Okay. Well, this it would take me a little more time to explain, but you find where the energy is minimized, and it's minimized when it lives at the tip of this disk. Of course, here the tip of the disk looks like a singular point, but in the 10-dimensional geometry, it's perfectly smooth. Yeah.
No, this graph. What are the axes?
The axis is this is the eta direction, and this is the rho direction. These are the two directions that appear here. And these are two of the geometric directions in the 10-dimensional space. So the 10-dimensional geometry depends non-trivially on eta and rho, and then all the other directions are just determined by symmetries. The dependence on all the directions are determined by symmetries. Okay, so it lives at this point. So in order to find the properties of the geometry close to this point, all you need to do is you don't need to find the full solution. All you need to do is to look at the solution close to the tip of the disk. So that's a simpler problem. And what I just said about things living at the tip of the disk is true whether you have one disk or many disks and so on. So then you have states that live at the tips of these disks. And if you can expand near this region, you can actually find the solution in more complicated cases. So actually, when you try to find the solution near the tips of the disks, the problem is becomes essentially an electrostatic problem now in 2 dimensions, because we have translation symmetry in the direction along the disk. And then we can use conformal symmetry arguments to find the solution. So this is a situation where now the disks are infinite, and we have basically they are like planes, and we have a problem where we have a complex plane with cuts and so on, and then we find it is rather reminiscent of what Dagraff and Buffa were doing when they in their work on the relation to n equal to 1 theories. But I mean, here the context is slightly different, but it's similar in the sense that you have a problem where you have these cuts in the complex plane, and you find the conformal transformation to make the sphere. Well, in this case, you have an upper half plane, and the aspects of the geometry are contained in that conformal transformation, and so on. So that's one point. I'm not going to write it down in detail right now, but you can actually solve for the solution here, and you find the specific form of the solution, and that solution is a plane wave geometry. So in the simplest case, let's discuss first the simplest case. You have an isolated disk, and you look at the solution near here, and this is just a simple plane wave geometry. It's a plane wave that is a plane wave in the two-way theory. It's a plane wave that has the property that, so as usual with these plane waves, you have some dx plus dx minus directions, and then you have here some other coordinates, and then you have some flat transfer space in terms of these coordinates, and you can think of these transverse coordinates as okay, and then you have, let me just finish this. So you have eight transverse coordinates, let's say first R4 and second 4, and when you think about a particle or a string in Lycon gauge, where you fix x plus equal to tau, then these coordinates are represented as fields that have a certain mass. They have, let's say, mass 1 for this and mass 2 for this. So we have four fields with mass 1 and four fields with mass 2. Now, I should say that we get the same thing in all these cases. So in the plane wave matrix model, we also get the same thing. If we expand around one of these disks, we get precisely the same thing. Okay, so this the fact that we have this type of excitations with these masses is especially clear from the point of view of the plane wave matrix model. So, because there, we discussed we had nine fields. So we had the fields x1 up to x3 that have mass 2, and then we had the fields, let's say, c and c bar, and then four other fields, phi 1 to phi 4, right? So the field C is the one that has delta minus j equal to 0, so delta equal to j, and it's the one that we use to make large A operators like trace e to the j, okay? And then but in order to consider near BPS states and so on, we put in some impurities. These impurities are inserting in this trace a few powers of, we can insert in this trace, let's say, a couple of these fields. We can choose from this field. And what are these fields? So here, if we consider these fields, remember I said had mass 1, so they have delta minus j equal to 1. So there are four of them, so we identify them with these four. And then here, there are three of them that have mass 2, so these have delta minus j equal to 2. So these are three of them, three of the ones that appear here. And then we have this field C bar, which is the other one. So we have the four fields, and with the right masses. And actually, due to the Ramon-Ramon fields, we don't actually have SO4 symmetry in these directions. We only have SO3 symmetry, which agrees with the fact that this problem actually has SO3 symmetry. So at least the spectrum of masses is basically the same as what we'd naively expect from this theory. And this was, for me, one of the motivations for study, trying to find out exactly what these gravity solutions were, because I had thought that this matrix model might be a case in which you could probably derive the Lycon Hamiltonian more directly, the string Lycon Hamiltonian more directly from the gauge theory, because there is this close connection between the number of degrees of freedom we have in the matrix model to the number of transverse directions we have on the string, which is precisely the same. If we were to do the same type of counting in n equal to 4 Young Mills, in n equal to 4 Young Mills, we have an infinite number of oscillators that we can. So once we pick, let's say, some field C, we have all the oscillators in the Young Mills theory that we could insert here. Why restrict to particular 8 of them? So here we have just 8 possibilities that we can put in. So it seemed. So that's why I thought that this case probably would give us a plane wave on the nose, and that we could be able to Unfortunately, we are not there yet for technical reasons. That I'm not sure if it is technical or conceptual. Okay, so that sounds nice. So in order to see whether, so as I discussed, these are the plane waves you obtain when you expand around an isolated disk. Now this vacua, in the case, let's go back to the plane wave matrix model. So we expand around this disk, we find this plane wave. And the actual spectrum of states around this plane wave, so if we compute energy minus J for a particle that on the string wall sheet has momentum n, there is this formula that says that this should go like 1 plus some number times n squared over J squared. So this is just the spectrum of massive particles on the wall sheet. And there is a relationship between the number that appears here and the parameters of the Young-Mills theory. And in n equal to 4 Young-Mills, I remind you that this relationship was that this is G squared Young-Mills times n. And if you expanded this, then the number was the same as you got perturbatively and so on. So that was in n equal to 4 Young-Mills. You can ask, well, what happens in these cases? Okay. So something you find in all these cases is that this number actually depends on many details. So it depends on which particular vacuum we are considering in the theories. It's not the same number for all the various theories. So even if you take the plane wave matrix model, you have different numbers if you consider, for example, this disk and you expand around here, then if you consider this disk and you expand around here, and so on. So this number depends on the vacuum and the theory. Something that doesn't depend on that is the spectrum of masses, that one has mass 2 and the other one has mass 4. That's the fact that these have mass 2 is determined by, mass 1 is determined by the symmetries, by the fact that we have the SO5 symmetry, SO6 symmetry, sorry. This one is not so obviously determined by the symmetries. So one can ask, well, what do you get for this number for the simplest vacuum of this matrix model? So the simplest vacuum of this matrix model is when we take the coordinates xi. So we have these coordinates xi from 1 to 3. And we set them to 0. So this is sort of the simplest SU2 representation. Remember I said that these were related to SU2 representation. So this is the simplest case. And it's the case for which this argument that I was applying here is especially especially correct. So in this case, what we expect to find from the Grady solution is a situation where we have an infinite disk, and then, so this is the infinite eta equal to 0 plane, and then we have a single disk that is at the distance 1 from the origin that has charge n0, where n0 is the number of the zero brains. And so in principle, if we wanted to find this plane wave, we just have to expand around here. Okay, but then we find one problem. So the problem is the following. Let's, before doing this that is at distance 1, let's do this at some distance, let's call it n5, from the origin. Remember that n5 was the flux of some field, which is related to 5 brains. So actually, the distance here is somehow related to the number of n5 brains in a way that I'm going to try to explain a little better now. So when you try to find, so if n5 is large, then it turns out that this Grady solution is a weakly curve, and you can expand around this point. And the solution you find is a solution which is this exact same plane wave, well, not exactly this plane wave, but something close to this, except with the minor differences. So instead of this having this R4, you have here the near horizon geometry of a 5 brain. So like something like d5 square plus d omega 3 square with some factor of n5 here in front. Okay. And instead of this mass term, you have a slightly different mass term which involves the 5 brain and some of the angles on that S3. Okay. So the theory is basically, the theory on light congation you will get is the theory on the throat of the 5 brain, except that you have this mass term. If you go to the region where this is a minimum and you expand around that minimum, so this there is a quadratic expansion around it, and if you do just that expansion, you get the plane wave we discussed before. So you get that plane wave by expanding very close to this point. But actually, if N5 is finite, you should also consider this whole region. Especially if N5 is... Okay, but then you run into a problem when N5 is 1, because when N5 is 1, you are not supposed to have a near horizon region of a 5 ring. And we haven't totally resolved this issue, what exactly happens in that case, because for N5 bigger than 1, this point is really inside the near horizon region. But with N5 equal to 1, there is supposed to be no near horizon region. Well, there isn't in the literature a clear statement of what exactly happens for a single 5 ring. But the statements you will find is that when N5 is equal to 2, that is the lowest value for which you have a near horizon region. And with N5 is equal to 1, well, you don't exactly know what happens. So that's one thing that has stopped us from making a more precise connection to what I was telling you about here. Nevertheless, you can just say, well, let's ignore this fact for a little moment, and let's consider N5 finite, and let's compute the function that appears here. So the function that appears here will be some function, in the gravity solution, will be a function of, let's say, g squared n, and also of N5, so n0. And the function that appears is a function which is g squared n0 divided by n5, which is basically the charge, the number of two primes here, to the power 1/2. Okay. So okay. So this is what we get from gravity. Now in field theory we can do exact same calculation, and to one loop we just get g squared and 0. Okay. Well, actually we get n0 over n5. So this is what we get in the gauge theory. And this calculation is basically very similar to a calculation you would do in n equal to 4 Young-Mells. So, and the only minor difference, well, actually, it is basically the same. So, in the end, it's a dimensional reduction of the calculation you do in n equal to 4 Young-Mells. So you see that the function that appears is really different, and there should be some correction that brings you from here to here. Okay. Now there's been a lot of work in computing perturbative corrections to these formulas in the case of this plane wave matrix model. So people did calculations up to 4 loops. Plevka and collaborators did that. So, and what they found is that indeed, if you look at the leading correction, let me first make a general statement before I discuss the details. So, what do you expect to find here in general? So, we are interested in some operator which has the form trace c to the j. And then we put some impurity, let's say one of those phi 1. So let's say there is phi 1 and then phi 2, c to the j minus l. You know that the usual thing you put here. So you consider states that have this form. So here all we've done is to insert in the string of c's, we inserted two impurities with a specific momentum. Okay. So you expect that if j is very large, even if the coupling is moderately large, you expect that delta minus j, well, should basically be, well, just the dimensions of these things. Well, first of all, you would expect that the contributions of these two factors adds up, so factorize, so it's the sum of the contributions from one and the other, and that each contribution should be 1 plus then some correction, and the correction should vanish when j gets very large, because then this becomes closer and closer to a BPS state. And it should vanish in proportion to how far this is from the case from n equal to 0. So in the case n equal to 0, this is an actual BPS state. So for n equal to 0, there is no correction, and for n non-zero, the correction should also be symmetric, and the n goes to minus n, so you expect some correction which basically looks like this. And here in front, in principle, you can have any function of chi square n. Okay? So this is the leading correction you expect to be like this. As I said, for low values, it looks like this. And people have computed this function to up to fourth loop order. So it starts as a function of x, f of x. I don't know. It's, you expand this up to x to the fourth. And indeed, so one of the things they found for this model is indeed this the coefficients in this expansion are non-zero. In n equal to 4 means you only find x, at least to the low orders, well, at least I think up to third order that people have computed it more or less explicitly, they found that it's zero in n equal to 4 mils. And then there is this argument of Santa Ambrosian's and on, which says that it's exactly zero. But in this model, it is non-zero, and the fact that they found non-zero coefficients is indeed consistent with the fact that strong coupling is completely different. If they have found zero for these coefficients, and we find here a completely different result of strong coupling, there would be a contradiction. But, well, not yet. It could be that the time that is non-zero is a very high order. But anyway, so that's... unfortunately, we cannot... Well, of course, we cannot compare to the results for two reasons. One is that they consider the case of n5 equal to 1, which is the simplest vacuum. And of course, the second is that when the calculation is done at strong coupling, there are weak coupling. But even then, if it had been done for the same case in both cases, you would find as a function of x, well, the perturbative result at small x, and then the strong coupling result, and you could try to see how well whether they overlap in some sense. That unfortunately we cannot do due to the fact that we cannot find the near horizon geometry for a single 5-ring. Yeah, maybe I'll stop here.
Any questions?
Yeah.
So in the case of ADSI process 5,
yeah,
you can start graphic assertion this angular momentum in one direction in SO 6. Can you construct a solution with angular momentum in three directions?
Right, so this is a question of can you consider BPS states that preserve less supersymmetry, for example, that have angular momentum not just in one of the directions of the subsystem? You can do that. So you can find what the geometrical constraint is, but what's a bit harder in that case is to find the boundary conditions. So you find a structure which is similar to what I discussed. Let me discuss once. Well, let me give you a flavor. So in what we discussed, we had a space that was basically flat, right? We had this space that was characterized by these three directions, right? And here it was flat space, and then there was some overall function you had to determine, right? In these more complicated cases, you have here more coordinates, and this space is basically some Keller manifold, right? And the metric, the Keller potential depends on y, and there is some equation for that Keller potential, but you don't know the boundary conditions. And the hardest part is to determine these boundary conditions that give you smooth geometry.
So there's no fermion
droplet. Okay, so there is the second question. So the question is whether there is any fermion droplet picture or some picture that at least will give you the right intuition on what the physics to expect. There is something like that. So David Bernstein considered states that carry the three charges, and from the point of view of the field theory, and sort of argued that you wanted to view them as some kind of matrix model with the three. So he wrote down the matrix model with the three matrices, and then described the resulting system as a system of sort of interacting bosons, so some kind of... They were not really fermions, but they were not really free bosons, but they were somehow interacting. And he argued that they formed some kind of shell and described some of the perturbations of this shell. I refer you to his paper for more details. But
half
BPS states? No, these are 1/4 or 1/8 BPS states. And they carry momentum, so J12 and J34. So that's the 1/4 and also J56 for the 1/8
PS. Are there
1/2 PS states? Well, 1/2 PS states is what I talked about here, so that is well understood. So what he did was to try to extend that to 1/4 and 1/8 PS states. But he found some description from the field theory point of view. Now, it's not clear which is the field theory description that we have a more precise correlation to the gravity description. You see, if you just consider the 1/2 EPS states, you could describe them in terms of free fermions, but you could equally describe them in terms of free bosons. So I made this whole story with the free fermions, but what we really have is some enumeration of the number of states. And this enumeration of the number of states fits equally well if you consider a system of free bosons. Just that this phase-space description seems to match better with the gravity description if you consider the free fermions. For some reason, this free fermion description is better for capturing the aspects of the system for large N and so on. So presumably there should be a relationship. Perhaps there is a relationship between what Bernstein does here and these Keller manifolds and the kind of boundary conditions you put for them and so on. But I don't know the precise relationship yet.
Any other questions? I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One is, if I understand correctly, each of these droplet configurations in the half PPS state corresponds to a geometry in target space, like ADS5 times 5 is this round configuration,
right,
and so forth. So there's a super selection sector in the geometry in the target space, so we don't sum over different ADS5 times 5 geometries or deformers. So each one of these droplet configurations is a solution which we don't typically sum over because of super selection. First of all, is that correct, my understanding of what you're saying, and what the interpretation is?
No, the super selection, I think, should be should select only solutions that are different at the non-normalizable level. In the sense, all the geometries that are asymptotic to the same ADS5 geometry should be summed over. So we should sum over all these geometries.
So you're saying even in the maximally supersymmetric case, ADS5 times 5,
yeah,
there's no sense in which we should just restrict attention to...
Right, yeah.
That doesn't make sense. So in other words, the half BPS fluctuation is part of the...
It's part of the whole theory, and if you should sum over them. So depending on what you are doing, you might, if you're considering, for example, a partition function for very long times, then you project on the ground state, and the ADS5 cross S5 is the dominant contribution to that. But if you are doing something else, the 1/2 EPS, it's like any other state.
Right.
In principle, all normalizable states, all normalizable deformations of ADS5 are different contributions you should include.
Right. The other thing is that, so you have this two-dimensional plane,
yeah,
which is flat and so on. You're describing here a generalization possibly to the other EPS, but even not even that. Is there a possibility of either global identification or making this a Riemann surface or something? In other words, not too dramatic difference from what you have done, but maybe toroidal identification or Riemann surfaces. Do they make sense geometrically?
Okay, they make a lot of sense. So the simplest... In order to be consistent with what we are doing, I think you can do toroidal identifications because our Killing spinner was invariant under it was independent of x1 and x2, sort of. And then you can do these identifications and not break supersymmetry. Something you couldn't do, for example, is make an angle identification, because then you would. But an angular identification. But okay, so let me briefly discuss these other cases. So the simplest thing is take x1 to be equal to x1 plus some constant, right? So in this case, all these fermions are on a cylinder. And, well, you can choose different configurations. You can choose, for example, a band of fermions like this, right? And what this corresponds to, so now this has different asymptotic conditions. So it's not ADS5 cross S5 anymore. So what it is a theory that you can think of it as a theory of a D4 brain on R cross S1. Process 3, okay? If you shrink this to zero size and you go to some dual variables, then it's the theory on R1, 1 cross S3, okay? It's a very close cousin to N equal to 4. I mean, what you're doing is you are... you start with N equal to 4 and you add to the Hamiltonian this current I discussed. After you do that, the mass term for these bosons disappears, and you get the problem of two of these. The coordinate C becomes a particle in a magnetic field, and then you identify one of those coordinates. And when you do that, the usual conditions, when you identify transverse direction to a D-brain, you go to a D-brain of one dimension more, and this is exactly what we are saying here. So that's this theory. I mean, to really define this theory should be thought of as a DM5-brain theory on R cross T2 cross S3. Right? But so it's a theory that doesn't have a terribly clear UV definition. It does have a reasonable Lagrangian here. And one of the properties it has is, well, there are these two directions, and there is a Young-Mills theory in these two directions. And this theory has different vacua, which you can take these fermions and move them around. So the thing that determines the theory is the asymptotic shape of the droplets. But then the actual shape of the droplets gives you different vacua of the different theories. This is a general principle. So, for example, you can take something out like this and so on. And now you can recognize that this picture is the same as the picture you would draw for 2D Young-Mills, for example. And this 2D Young-Mills is basically this, this, except that here they are all BPS states. We don't have an action for the Young-Mills theory, but they are weighted equally. Yeah, they are weighted equally, and they are different vacua of the same theory.
And how about Riemann surfaces, and heterogeneous?
Well, heterogeneous, I think, I don't know for sure, but I think that I'm not sure they are consistent with our ansatz, because I think they are not, actually. Because in order to have a Riemann surface, let's say the simplest thing is to put a hyperbolic plane, so something like x2 squared. Well, if you just do this, it wouldn't work, because you... Well, it might work. I'm not sure. I would have to look at it a little more. Let me discuss just one more, which is the case that you make a two torus. Mm-hmm. That in that case, you, well, this picture in terms of fermions is very similar to what you get for Chern-Simons theory in a two torus. And the theory, actually, the theory far away, the geometry asymptotes to geometry which looks like, well. Well, it's the time times a two torus, which is basically this two torus times, it's T-dual to this two torus, sorry, times S3, and then there are some fluxes of H3 over this S3. So it's the geometry that arises from this intersection of two NS5 brains that was also recently considered by Itzhaki, Seiberg, and Kutasov. So these are different vacua of this, again, of this theory when you put it on the two torus. So the idea is that when you have this theory, it becomes in the infrared, it becomes a theory in 2+1 dimensions, which has a mass gap, but has Chern-Simons excitation. I mean, it has a Chern-Simons gauge field, and that's what's giving rise to the different vacuum. Maybe an answer to your question about the Riemann surface.
Yes.
In this case, in this M theory case, we can indeed have a Riemann surface, and it is indeed related to solutions that we have found for other reasons. So,
but still happy here.
Yeah. Well, actually, to relate it to what we're discussing, so if you make this a Riemann surface, you see now the asymptotics will be different, and if you make it into a Riemann surface, you find that. At least if you look at the simplest solution, so for large Y, the solution should become basically independent of the Riemann surface. Mm-hmm. And you basically find that you cannot choose a e to the d, that the e to the d at some point becomes zero. Okay. Now, at some non-zero value of Y. And this is not within the class of boundary condition we chose, but we could generalize it a little bit. So what happens in that case is that the time direction shrinks to zero size. Now, this is the problem with that direction is time, but if you make a weak rotation so that direction is space, then there is no problem, and it is fine, and you get a smooth geometry. And what those are situations where you make weak rotations. So in everything that I've said, you can make weak rotations. And when you make weak rotations, the type of boundary conditions you want to impose is going to be different. It's slightly different in detail. And so this, I've said that there were situations where we had an S5, this, and some time direction, right? So now you can make this into a phi direction, into an angular direction, into a time direction, and this you can make into an ADS5. Okay. And so what these things with Riemann surface are some compactifications of M-theory to ADS5 that contain a Riemann surface, and then they have an S4 fiber over this Riemann surface. And they're perfectly smooth.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank Juan.
But maybe to expand a little more on this question, so in this case of the Riemann surface, we have only one type of boundary condition on the Riemann.